Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Daniel Foster of National Review Online, and for Jim Garrity today, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Dan, as always, good news, bad news, and crazy news. And the bad and the crazy are really bad and crazy both. So we had to scratch our heads a little bit to figure out which category to put them in. The good news, however, is coming from the Barbara Walters Fascinating People special, which is obviously not well thought out because neither you or I are among the most fascinating people in America, according to Barbara Walters, which is just absolutely insane, Dan. I'm sure you agree with that.
Yeah, I've already started a letter writing campaign. We'll see if maybe they'll get it right next year.
Yeah, I hope so. Anyway, Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, former First Lady, 2008 presidential candidate, one of the most fascinating people, according to Barbara Walters. And Barbara Walters asked her point blank, are you going to run in 2016? And here was the exchange.
You know, I've said I really don't believe that's something I will do again. I am so grateful I had the experience of doing it before. But, you know, I think there are lots of ways to serve, so I will continue to serve.
What would it take to convince you to run in 2016?
You know, that's all hypothetical, because right now I have no intention of running.
Right now I have no intention. So there's a little bit of wiggle room there, but she said that after she lost in 2008, Dan, and she's said it while she's been Secretary of State, so I think that might actually be her gut instinct. The question is whether she'll get talked out of it by her husband and perhaps some folks up in the Democratic hierarchy. The big thing that I think might be holding her back, and I don't know what the numbers look like now, but I know she ended the 2008 campaign with just a tremendous amount of debt, and that might be a major stumbling block there.
Part of the deal with her taking Secretary of State, or there are whispers about part of the deal, was that the Obama campaign organization would help her retire some of her campaign debt. So I think that's probably taken care of. I mean, look, this is a good martini this week, because from where we're sitting right now, it looks like Hillary Clinton would be the most compelling candidate on the Democratic side and be a tough organizationally, name recognition-wise. It'd be just a tough haul for any Republican. But in 2007, people were probably saying the exact same thing.
Right.
And if you told us that it wasn't going to be Hillary Clinton in 2008, it was going to be this young senator from Illinois, we probably would have signed up for that. So even though I think it's good news because she's the biggest name amid the whispers right now, you know, things could look a lot differently in a couple years.
I think that's it. I think given Newt Gingrich's comments, which we talked about earlier in the week, Jim and I did, you know, there's just this sense out there that, man, the conditions were so good this year, and now they've got this household name with name recognition through the stratosphere. She's, for the most part, seen as doing, certainly among the Democratic base and even among independents and some Republicans, doing a competent job as Secretary of State. So she might even be a more formidable candidate in 2016 than 2008, despite the fact that I don't think either of us have any illusions that she would be a fairly bad president. So the fact that this juggernaut might be off the stage means we might have to deal with the likes of Martin O'Malley and Deval Patrick.
Andrew Cuomo. Deval Patrick.
Yeah, absolutely. Cuomo with massive approval numbers in big liberal New York up there. But so we'll see if Hillary Clinton changes her mind. She's certainly got a couple of years to do that. And I'm sure all the old Clinton hands, the Carvels and Begallas of the world would love to see her jump back in. But she would be almost 70 years old. So that's another stumbling block as well. On to martini number two now. And Dan, it was just a few weeks ago where one of the most recent videos from James O'Keefe of Project Veritas showed Patrick Moran, at that time a high-ranking staffer in his father, Virginia Congressman Jim Moran's reelection campaign, explaining to someone who posed as being sympathetic to the Democratic cause in the Moran campaign how to forge, essentially, your voter ID at the polls. He says, in Virginia, you can use a utility bill. Just make sure it looks good, though, because otherwise they'll bust you on it. They're actually really cracking down on IDs this year. So if you're going to do it, make it look good. He had to resign. The liberal media, of course, blamed James O'Keefe somehow. Well, now Patrick Moran is in a little bit more hot water, although he's basically gotten a slap on the wrist for this. He was originally charged with felony assault for smashing his girlfriend's face into a steel trash can outside of a nightclub on 14th Street in Washington. It broke her nose, broke her orbital bone in her skull. somehow they're still together, and she's saying that it's not as bad as it was all made out to be, even though police witnessed this. And, of course, Congressman Moran himself says, you know, it's just an embarrassing situation. They're both good kids, so let's move on. Pretty sure this story would be getting a whole lot more attention if the congressman had an R after his name.
What I don't get about the congressman's comments, who's suggesting that the victim is not a good kid? Nobody's really impugning her reputation in all of this. Yeah, this is a weird thing because on the one hand, we had a signed police report that said this terrible assault happened. He was originally charged with felony assault. And as I said on the corner yesterday, maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I think if you break a girl's skull, you should probably be issued an orange jumpsuit and spend a night in a jail cell instead of being able to plead down to simple assault as he was and get, you know, probation. So you have a sworn police statement that said this was a vicious assault. You had, at the end of the day, the victim putting out a statement through the congressman's office saying that her heel broke and she tripped, which is not what two police officers saw with their eyes. And then you had the congressman's press flack saying that it was an accident, again, contradicting a sworn police report. So this is really dirty, and it's not like, you know, it couldn't have happened to a worse guy, too. Moran has a long history of getting physical, shall we say, bar fights. His ex-wife called 911 about domestic abuse. So unfortunately, this might have been the environment that the son grew up in. It's certainly no excuse for his actions. And this guy's among the most scummy Democrats in the House, and I don't feel too bad at all saying that. This is just the sort of typical thing we've expected from this guy. By the way, the last time we talked about him before the voter fraud stuff was probably when he was comparing the Republican Party to the Taliban. At least when it comes to, you know, the war on women, I mean, it seems like the Moran family is actually waging one.
Safe district. That's the answer to the question everyone's asking. How in the world is this guy still in Congress? He also blamed the Jews for getting us into the war in Iraq and all sorts of other gems over the years. So Jim Moran, an embarrassment to Virginia, but thanks to the district lines, he's not going anywhere soon. On to martini number three now, up closer to your neck of the woods now, not to be outdone.
Speaking of safe seats, yeah.
New Jersey Democratic Senator Bob Menendez is apparently hitting for the cycle now because, of course, there were allegations of campaign irregularities. And then just before the election, the Daily Caller story came out that Bob Menendez had not only visited prostitutes in the Dominican Republic, but chintzed on the tab. And now we've got the story that an unpaid illegal immigrant sex offender intern in his office has been arrested, which would be bad enough on its own. But then there's this little aspect that actually, give credit, MSNBC brought up in an interview with Menendez on Wednesday. Here's Tamron Hall.
According to a U.S. official involved in this case, in this AP report, Homeland Security Department was instructed not to arrest him until after Election Day. Do you know anything about a delay in his arrest?
Absolutely not. I didn't know anything about the young man's status until this Monday. So actually, before I came onto this program, my staff knew about it on Monday. I didn't know about it until I came right before your program. And I assume at some point you want to talk about immigration reform.
Way to change the subject there, Senator. Very, very subtle. I'm guessing in New Jersey, Dan, it probably still wouldn't have mattered if you had the breaking news of the visit to the prostitutes with the illegal immigrant sex offender in the office. But this is just not good.
Yeah, that's why I can't even get too mad about it. It's obviously an embarrassment and criminal. The idea, Jonah Goldberg made the joke the other day that he was undocumented to work and documented as a sex offender. Right. So you think if they were that's the combination of things, undocumented to work because he was an illegal immigrant and a known sex offender. That cocktail would probably prevent you from getting a job in a senator's office. But no, not in this case. And that's why I can't get too mad about it, though, because I think you're right. If this came out, it wouldn't have changed the course of the election. Just like when the prostitution story broke, anyone who knew the shape of that race, and Joe Carilus was a good guy, the Republican ran against him, was saying, oh, yeah. Big deal. He might win by 59% now,
exactly.
You know, instead of 62 or 63. So that's a safe seat. Yeah. It has me longing and hoping that Cory Booker is going to decide to run for Senate in New Jersey and not governor, because he'd obviously be a tough opponent for Chris Christie in a reelect. But also because whatever you think about Cory Booker, he is clean as a whistle at this point, and by all accounts, a good man. So New Jersey hasn't exactly covered itself in glory with its senators recently. Yeah. Corzine, Torricelli.
Exactly. He'd be probably running for the Lautenberg seat, assuming Lautenberg doesn't run again when he's 90. But you never know. So the other just awful part of this is the politics obviously played by the Department of Homeland Security, even though it wasn't going to impact the election. The fact that they basically held off on arresting this sex offender until well after Election Day is pretty pathetic.
It seems nakedly the case. I mean, I know people in Homeland Security. They make decisions, timing decisions about arrests all the time. If they have somebody in hand, he's not dangerous, they might put it off, dedicate their resources elsewhere, whatever. But it seems in this case that the reason why they didn't arrest him was they didn't want to affect the election. And that's no good.
Yeah, absolutely right. Playing politics at that level is not what you want to see. Dan, I believe this will be your last guest appearance for the year. If that changes, I'll wish you a Merry Christmas again later. But have a great Christmas, and thanks for everything you've done this year.
Thank you. Good tidings. Happy Christmas and a Merry New Year.
Daniel Foster is news editor at National Review Online, in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Karembas of Radio America. Please join Jim and me on Friday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.